Hey kids, do you like wrestling? Well, we like wrestling too. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Myself and Chris Novembrino kind of doing a lazy river of wrestling criticism, going through the news and whatever happened in stateside television wrestling. And also, you know what? Sometimes we just like to watch old stuff and talk about that too. Love for you to give us a listen if you haven't already. We are Shake Them Ropes here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Professional wrestling. Oh, we like wrestling too. This week in the news, Stephanie Vaquer makes her decision, and the Lazy River AEW does one of the best promos they've ever done, exclusively for social media. And for Vader Club, Chris presents Sabu and Rob Van Dam versus Hayabusa and Jinsei Shinzaki. This is Shake Them Ropes. He is Chris Novembrino. I am Jeff Hawkins. I almost died on Wednesday. That's not hyperbola. That's not me being dramatic. This is what the nurse told me. So I went to get my 2-year cystoscopy. I promised people I'd explain it. So here's what happened. Went to get my 2-year cystoscopy at the clinic. They were 2 hours behind, which is always nice. I get it. I'll give you the results in a moment. And after you get this, you get two drugs. You get an antibiotic and you get a medicine to prevent UTI infections. I've been taking this medicine for now 2 years, you know, every 3 months or every 6 months, depending on what it is. But in January, I experienced some hives and a little bit of swelling and stuff. And I thought it was an allergic reaction to the detergent on the blankets or on the gurney or something. I thought I had caught something on there. And when they called me for my follow-up, I told them all this. And nobody bothered to consult a doctor about any of these symptoms, et cetera, et cetera. They just wrote it down on their paper for the follow-up. Oh, that just seems weird. Okay. Cool. Well, what it turns out is I got very lucky on that day because the nap I took was actually me passing out. And was not so lucky this time around. I had developed an allergy to what is called sulfa. And sulfa medicines, which like 7% of people get, I've all of a sudden gotten this. And I went to anaphylactic shock about 3 minutes after I took this medicine and left the doctor's office. I was at the parking payment. The parking attendant was on a stool in between two machines and had her back turned. I take a bit of a dive next to the parking machine. She goes, "No, you have to use the other machine. That one's broken." I go, "Lady, I just took a header. I got to get back inside." So I struggle back inside. It's now after 5 o'clock, so most of the businesses are closed right there. I push the elevator button, and I go back to sleep. And my doctor and his assistants find me at the banks of the elevator, take me back up, call the ambulance. My blood pressure drops precipitously. I am, they are desperately trying to get an IV in me and an EPA in me and just trying to get me going. I take a nice 200 yard, they call an ambulance. The hospital's across the street. So I get an ambulance ride for 200 yards. It's going to cost me about $3,000. That's always fun. And yeah, so I went into anaphylactic shock. You get these horrible chills. I had about 8 blankets on me once I got the Benadryl in me because your skin heats up and your nerves tighten up almost like you have edema in them, and got covered in rashes. My face goes red. It starts, I look like Deadpool without a mask on for about an hour, which is weird. Yeah, I took a bit of a dive. I got a little scar here on my nose, but they did a CAT scan. I didn't bonk my head. All of that's clear. So it was a scary situation. I had a nice scare. I'm sorry for those of you who actually listen to the Dynamite show. I kind of left Paul lurking on that one because I thought I'd be home in time. I didn't, but I got lucky because I could have been driving and blacked out. So that happened. As for the cancer, I'm not free and clear, but I'm not in trouble. So it's not great news, but I have some non-invasive stuff. Couple of little cells there just hanging out, having a drink, deciding what they want to do. So we're going to keep monitoring it, and I'm going to keep paying my very good doctor money. He's a fighter pilot. He's a hotshot. He's one of these guys that is highly recommended. So we'll keep going. We'll keep seeing what happens. But I apologize if I'm a little down. I'm having a bad mental health day. I'm thinking about my dad and his cancer quite a lot right now. So I will do my best to get through this, and I appreciate you all. Chris isn't having a good week either, but I don't know if he wants to talk about it on air.
No. That's fine. That would be a very weird topic.
That would be a very weird topic, and we'll just leave it at that. You got anything for just light item, or should we just go into the news?
Light items.
Because I was heavy just now.
No, for sure. I've been practicing a lot of these technical exercises recently on guitar. And
scales?
Not even scales.
Triple
they're sort
licks?
Of they are four-note clusters of notes, basically kind of inspired by the intro from Frame by Frame by King Crimson.
Okay.
The little pattern that Robert Fripp does in the intro of Frame by Frame. I've taken that four-note pattern and dithered basically all the possible finger motions you can do on your left hand, like all the ones that you might viably be doing on your left hand. And I'm using them as picking and timing practice. Initially it was to try to get down like frame by frame as an intro, but it's kind of gone way beyond that. And it's making me hella fast, dude. I have been making meaningful speed increases recently, and that's been cool.
Music documentary, for those of you who haven't seen it, Disney Channel or Disney Plus, Summer of Soul, about the 1968 Harlem Arts Festival. Sly and the Family Stone is the greatest band to ever live. That's all I'm gonna say.
A music documentary I'd also recommend is In the Court of the Crimson King, which is the documentary done on the final tour of King Crimson that sort of serves as a retrospective and gets Fripp talking about the band to a certain extent, and then more importantly all the different members of the band talking about him. And it's a really good character study piece in addition to a very good documentary about the band.
Let's get to the news. Stephanie Vaquer signed with WWE. This is Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, talking about several sources close to the situation said that she didn't seriously consider AEW. Someone who grew up WWE on television in Chile, that was her goal in 2018. She got a tryout there, but WWE decided against signing her. Here's where it gets a little sticky. This is according to Dave, and he editorializes a bit here. Vaquer told CMLL and may have directly told New Japan, or CMLL told New Japan, that she signed contract on July 7th or July 8th with WWE and would not be appearing on the pay-per-view or any dates around Mexico and in foreign countries, including the August 24th Rev Pro anniversary show in London and other international dates CMLL had booked her for. She did work the July 9th show in Guadalajara against Tessa Blanchard for CMLL as her last night and won that match. There was a feeling that she, since she hadn't signed, should have, if she wanted to go to WWE, done business on the way out, essentially appear on the pay-per-view and dropped her titles. New Japan was upset that her appearance was advertised for 3 months, and then 5 days before the show, she pulled out. Another person noted, this is Dave, this has been the WWF MO dating back to 1983 under Vince McMahon. At no point had WWF or WWE ever done this to CMLL. I am of the opinion, though, Chris, that this is purely a Stephanie Vaquer decision. If you have read about her personal life in any way, she, her former boyfriend tried to kill her. And there are people in the company that were supporting her boyfriend. I don't think that's the reason for her picking WWF, but I think that might be a reason just to say, well, the hell with this, I'm going on to live my dream. Or she just might now have been a loser on the way out and do things the right way. A lot of people, and especially AEW fans, were snarking about, oh, well, now she's just gonna go and fight Electra Lopez as part of the LWO or whatever. And it's like, I am here for a woman 31 years old grabbing the bag and maybe not taking bumps if she doesn't want to. She's expected to start in NXT, and she's expected to be introduced on this tour in Mexico City that WWE is currently doing. Get paid, Chris. I'm happy for her either way. If she wanted to do, you know, work rate type matches in AEW, great. If she wants to just see if she can play Carnegie, which is the dream. It's a dream of every artist to do it on the biggest stage possible. And if WWE was her dream, then WWE was her dream. Maybe being a great wrestler wasn't being her dream. Maybe she just wanted to be in WWE and get paid and be a wrestler as opposed to some phony, you know, it's the difference between art, being an art house movie star and being a you know, multiplex movie star type of a thing in terms of your dreams. I'm fine with either. They're both good. They're both valid. I don't understand why people get so mad because you pick one company or another.
I can hardly blame any talent in a vacuum for signing a 3 or 4 year deal right now, looking at the outlook of these two companies. And you know, got to consider this from the talent's perspective as they're going into these negotiations. I would assume everyone would be rooting for the talent going into these negotiations. And if you are, then the talent's sitting at the table, looking at AEW, looking at WWE. WWE seems to have finally rid themselves of Vince McMahon and his declining quality of ideas. The new management team seems to be managing things in a much more, let's call it, sane way. And that has led to a better presentation of any number of different talents, including a lot of talents who back during Vince's day maybe wouldn't have been presented that well. I mean, right down to Chad Gable. I mean, you know, Chad Gable was Shorty G.
Yes.
Now he's at least a main character and an important character on the show.
Sort of. I mean, if you consider the Wyatt Six something. And look, I think people who don't like WWE have very valid arguments. I do. Really. I mean, they want to see their people succeed. And WWE has a long history. And look, some of those things are still held over. If you look at the fact that Ilya Dragunov and Carmelo Hayes are headlining WWE Speed on Twitter right now. Small guys don't get very far. Foreign people sometimes are put on the back burner or are all part of one ethnic stereotypical gang. See, Dragon
Lee. I didn't
Lee.
Say everybody was breaking through, did
no,
I?
No, you no.
No,
I am not,
no,
I am not
didn't.
Accusing you of anything.
I said
Chris.
The I said
Chris,
the thing I
Chris,
said
there's
the
no
things
need to
are
be
better than
four.
No, well, I'm gonna finish my circuit here now. So things are better now than they were 2-3 years ago. And if you're looking at the 4-year outlook in WWE, there is promise and potential for a number of talents. Though, of course, there are still some red flags. Ilya Dragunov's mishandling would be a good example of that. Now, let's swing over to AEW, who have been having an identity crisis pretty much since year one. They every single year, they seem to oscillate from one identity to another identity, and nothing is really an era so much as it is a phase.
Right.
You have an MJF phase. We are having a Swerve Strickland phase at this point with the Bucks doing a pseudo manager takeover phase, but none of this stuff will stick like phases don't. Eras have a lasting impact on thing. Phases get memory hold. Adam Cole and MJF are supposed to be building to some sort of meaningful feud. That was a phase. That doesn't actually matter now. Or we might revisit that, but it doesn't have the heft and the weight to it. So if I'm a talent getting signed to AEW, I'm worried that I could be a Wardlow phase. I'm worried that I could be a Powerhouse Hobbs phase. I'm worried that I could be a Ricky Starks phase.
You're worried that there's no guidance, that there's no plan.
Right.
And Ethan Page, you know, he came out and he compared the two and he said, you know, I went from a company that's in a, you know, where I didn't know what was going on to a well-oiled machine type of a thing. And a lot of people trashed him for it, but I understood what
he's
he was talking about.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong. That's the thing. And it's you know, it's both, you know, a detriment and a positive in some ways for AEW. They're trying to figure it out. I get it. I mean, but it's also one of those things where Tony Khan likes his control and likes to be the one guy who knows everything, and he wants to keep that close to the vest, and he'll delegate as needed. I get it. But yeah, I mean, but also WWE had a long head start, so, you know, I have nothing else further.
But no, I'm just saying, from a talent perspective, the only thing that AEW has to offer right now, it's not a bigger stage, it's not better ratings, it's not even more consistent presentation. It would have to be money, because you might have your banger Dave Meltzer five-star match in year one, or maybe you'll have it in year two.
Well, for her, though, there's an added one, too, is that she could work CMLL and New Japan if she wanted to stay around there.
Right, but that still all basically comes down to money.
Right, yes. The answer to most of your questions is money, as usual.
Yeah, it all comes back to money. The big thing that AEW has to offer would be money. And if they don't have the money to offer, i.e. overpaying, then there's really nothing for a talent, you know, right now. AEW needs to just offer 6-month, 1-year contracts for a little bit here, figure out who actually sticks and who's kind of worth the long-term investments. And also, you know, then you might be able to attract these people. You might have to overpay a little bit, but you're not locked in on a Jay White that you clearly have no idea and no vision on how to use.
Joe Tessitore will be joining SmackDown, most likely as the lead play-by-play announcer. When WWE made the announcement, they didn't specify SmackDown, but they did say Tessitore would be working with Corey Graves and Wade Barrett. So that kind of implies SmackDown. Tessitore has also signed an extension with ABC ESPN to continue announcing college football and top-ranked boxing. Those of you with old PlayStation memories, if you remember the Fight Night games, Joe Tessitore was the voice of those. Chris nodding his head excitedly a little bit. He kind of recognizes that. I never played those games. In the past, has also done NFL games.
I was trying to place the name because I'm like, I know I've heard this guy called.
I like this hire. I do. Yeah, no, I think it has potential.
It's a good hire. Yeah, I do too.
He has a phenomenal voice. The thing is, he also kind of has a little bit of a snark in him. So I think there's a bit of a danger of not being a completely straight play-by-play announcer, which is kind of what I want, but I want a play-by-play announcer with a little bit of personality so he doesn't become like a Adnan Verk type or whatever. You know, if he can find the role, if he can nail that in terms of the play-by-play stuff, Graves and Barrett playing off of him will be great. It's just one of those weird things where it's like, well, how in the bubble do you want to be as a sportscaster in this? And, you know, are you going to go from real sports to this is the fake sport I'm calling or whatever? But he's apparently been a fan for a number of years. But I think everybody says that. So I'd proceed with caution, but I really like the hire.
I agree. I think it's one step closer to WWE trying to, like, de-vincify certain nuances of their match calling and match presentation. The matches have gotten a little more wrestling-y, and the calling of the match has gotten a little more sports-like, and I like these moves towards that direction.
Damon Kemp was informed that his contract would not be renewed with NXT. This was not a release per se. This was just, we are not going to re-sign you to your deal. Damon Kemp, real name Bobby Stevenson, of course the brother of Gable Stevenson, who got a very big contract and they did nothing with. I find this disappointing. Chris and
they put him in a trunk and they brought him out to a bridge to go and think
off.
About. No, they Ilya Dragunov'd him, where they take you out to a bridge and they make you think about yourself.
Damon Kemp is on a farm playing with other Damon Kemps. That's all there is
to it. In upstate New York?
In upstate New York, probably. You know, he's on a farm playing with his friends. It's great. I find this short-sighted. Damon Kemp, to me, in that no quarter catch crew. Thank you. Bad name, great group, bad acting. But he's a guy who can talk and he's a guy who can wrestle. I don't care. People were saying, well, maybe it's because he's not a body guy. I go, I don't care. You don't have to be a body guy in this day and age. You can just talk, for God's sakes. And he was getting it. He's only 25. I hope he catches on somewhere else. because I thought he was doing a heck of a job in NXT, given what the requirements are to be decent in NXT.
Yeah, and I mean, I think not seeing him as a body guy really misunderstands that there are different shapes. And Damon Kemp is so built like a collegiate wrestler.
Yes.
That you completely believe that this guy with shoulders like that can absolutely like hook someone around their waist and then grind them into the ground. Like that guy has enough leverage to suplex anybody who wants to suplex.
I like Tavian Heights, but I think Damon Kemp was better.
I agree.
Yeah, I also look, if you're going to ask me why they did this, they are angry that they spent so much money on his brother and he didn't pan out. This is a bitter thing. This is nothing more than pure TKO looking at this and going, look how much we spent on his brother. Screw that guy. It's a very Vince-like move in some ways. And it's probably from corporate, not necessarily anybody within the organization like Michaels or anybody, but who knows? I don't know.
It's interesting, though. I mean, like, because they're sort of malingering on this, you could see his contract potentially getting saved somewhere in like a couple few weeks.
He could get re-signed.
Yeah.
I mean, that's always a possibility. Be interesting to see him come back from the dead, but sure. Or whatever.
He's on a bridge. Ilya Dragunov walked back from the bridge.
Look, Chad Gable got shot in the head, and he's back in Money in the Bank. So, hey, anything can happen in the WWE. Ric Flair finished with AEW for now. His energy drink sponsorship has ended. Chris, would you like to do the post-mortem, or should we just move on?
Well, yeah, I would say that this is the second best energy drink in wrestling, alignment of two like corporate synergies that we've seen this year. Obviously, Logan Paul with his prime synergy with WWE is running circles around Ric Flair. But Flair, a very respectable second. When you think about energy drinks in wrestling in 2024, Ric Flair is the second name that comes to mind. I think that his energy drink and its synergy with AEW really is at the same level of quality that we've come to associate with Ric Flair over the last several years here, which is slightly disgusting and a little bit unsettling, and you're kind of glad when it departs.
Mushroom-based energy drinks. Oh, it tasted like ass. NXT announcing September 1st. Their next PLE will be from Denver, Colorado with No Mercy. Enjoy the altitude short and the oxygen shortages, kids. And the main roster announced Bad Blood as a pay-per-view show on October 5th from the State Farm Arena in Atlanta. Give you a couple other quick ones in case anything catches your ear, Chris. Angel Garza re-upping with WWE for 3 years, announcing that. ACH, who quit wrestling years ago, returns on July 13th in Bluegrass, Iowa on a show. Tyler Bate, having had surgery on a torn pec, he will be out at least 6 to 8 months. And Riho suffered a fractured right arm in her match with Lady Frost on Collision. She is out for the immediate future. Anything float your boat on there?
Surprised Riho doesn't get injured more often, considering her, you know, there's just not
she's
much
very
to
slight
read.
Yes,
she's very slight. And shame about Tyler Bate, I guess that explains the Pete Dunne.
Yes.
Yeah.
And finally, just gonna tee this one up for you just in case. Dory Funk Jr., who was NWA champ when that was considered the top title in the world from 1969 to 1973 and an icon in Japan, will be wrestling one last match after all at the age of 83. And Chris, I'm here to tell you that that match will be just as good as every other Dory Funk match for the past 30 years.
Right. You know, you can't cite a decline in quality in Dory Funk's matches over last 25 years. If you liked one of them, you liked exactly all of them because they are all the same.
I watched, after we did When Worlds Collide last week, I watched the follow-up to that, which was The Public Enemy versus Terry Funk and Dory Funk. And Dory had tried to grow out the skullet to be... But that's one thing Joe Lanza and I can agree with is that we both find Dory Funk very boring. While we respect him for what he's contributed to the wrestling business, we both just find him so dry and dull. And he's always looked about 80 to me.
Right.
So.
It's just crazy to me that there's this divergence clearly between the timelessness and also just the overall quality of Dory Funk and Terry Funk. Terry is like one of the all-time great wrestlers, like ever. And Dory Funk is a guy that is Terry Funk's brother to me.
Yes. He's the guy that they renamed on WWF because Vince didn't like Junior or Dory. So they called him Hoss Funk. Yeah. So that's it for the news. Now on to the lazy river of wrestling criticism, whatever we had time for when we weren't in hospital beds dying. We'll get to it now. I am gonna start because I have a minor rant because I took a lot of crap on Twitter last or in beginning of this week on Monday when AEW released this exclusive Hangman Adam Page promo. And I was told, and it was taped after his collision match versus said Jay White for in the Owen Hart tournament. And I was told by everybody, well, there's been no further TV yet. Jeff, hang up, you moron, you dope. Oh, you're so stupid. They're definitely going to play this on Dynamite, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And I said, well, there's a reason they called it exclusive, because it was exclusive to social media. They played a few clips in the hype package for the Bryan Danielson match, but Bryan Danielson was a means to an end for Hangman Adam Page doing the most awesome promo on Swerve Strickland and explaining why he's so angry, why he's so rageful, why he's a bit out of control. And it all made sense. This is a guy who broke into my house and stared at my and threatened my child. I want him to burn. I want him to have no success. Chris, it had no irony, it had no comedy, it was pure hate, and it is one of the best promos they have ever done. And they didn't air it in its entirety on TV, but we did have time for an acclaimed music video about
Well,
the
you, but
Elite.
you know why? You know why? You can't. Because they haven't made up their mind about what Swerve Strickland is as a character. And if you have Swerve Strickland making himself the savior of AEW and being the face of AEW and everything, meanwhile, you have Hangman Adam Page making a very, very cogent and logic and fact-driven case about why he absolutely has every reason in the world to hate Swerve Strickland, with absolutely no reason not to hate Swerve Strickland. It's not as though Strickland has ever said that he is repentant about any of these things that he has done in the past. In fact, he was just sort of flashing it to Ospreay that he's the type of guy who does this sort of stuff, and that's what makes him champion. So I think, in a way, I guess it was good that they didn't put it on TV, but they should have, because it's a good characterization of Adam Page. It just further complicates the characterization around Swerve Strickland.
Well, I mean, you, but then I watched, like, I watched some of Collision. I watched the MJF promo on Ospreay, and they cut out. What's interesting is they cut out part of that for the part they cut on Dynamite. There was a line in there where it's like, "You wrestle for ratings, but it's for Dave Meltzer. I wrestle for ratings for a guy by the name of Nielsen." And you also just watch what Hangman and Ospreay kind of did on Wednesday. And there was a nugget of good things, but there's far too much wall breaking in a way. It's far too much insidery for me in terms of, the War of 24 didn't work. Well, the War of 24 part was actually pretty good. There was a part in there that I did. The thing about the Osprey one I didn't like is that you're out for yourself. It's like, well, everybody should kind of be out for themselves. And Max doesn't necessarily. But Max is still saying, I do this for the betterment of AEW. So it's actually not that true. That's the weird thing. It's like MJF is still doing the Flair. It is a pleasure to represent the NWA when I go to towns and blah, 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 blah stuff. And here's Max going, no, it's not true. You're not here for our hippie arts community. You're just in this to be selfish type of a thing. And it's like, well, I think everybody understands it's a business. This isn't exactly, you know, this isn't a summer camp or something like that. There's a bit offness in the tone of both MJF because he's just turned heel and this is his move all the time. And in Ospreay, but Ospreay had a few good lines. I like the "I have more talent in my left nut than you do." That's a connective thing between those two. But it's when they stop connecting to one another and start talking about this fake world of AEW type, where we're doing the corporate politics thing, which is a problem with WWE and being the face of the company and blah 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 blah, where it just falls apart for me. Chris, any thoughts on that?
No, I mean, I basically agree with everything you said there. I found MJF in this knee-jerk heel turn role. We're arriving at Lex Luger syndrome with him for me.
Ooh.
Yeah. We've turned him too many times.
Lex Luger lower on that scale than Big Show for you? Or is Big Show below Luger? Have we gone full I am out watching him because I'm tired of seeing him turn over and over and over again?
We are at Lex Luger. He is still over enough with crowds, but has been turned so many times that he'll never get past a certain... He'll never be top tier.
Oh, whereas, okay. I was thinking maybe Luger during the time when he had like Mr. Hughes and Harley Race managing him as world
champion.
No,
I'm thinking more like Luger 95, 96 in WCW, where he's still over, but he's over as like B-plus guy.
Yeah, he's playing Sting's friend who does bad
things.
He's
Sting's friend. Yeah, okay. He's Sting's friend. Like, and even once Sting turns, he's the B. He's kind of like the B plus hero. He's okay. Not the hero.
Gotcha.
That's kind of where I think these turns have moved MJF. They moved him, though. He loves to say he's a generational talent. He's now gotten Dolph Ziggler-y with this. He says the same promo lines. He has like kind of this one.
That's a shot across the bow. No, you're not lying, but it's like ooh. I have to think about that for a bit. When you do, when I react like that, you're making me think, and you might be right. Go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah. No. He's got his little Dolph Ziggler-y sort of "I steal the show every single night. I'm a generational talent" sort of vibes to it. I mean, the work's good. It's not amazing. Like, what's your favorite MJF move? Right. This is the one where he hits him with the ring. Yeah.
Is it the one where he hits him with the ring? That was a kind of an unnecessarily burial of Daniel Garcia too in that promo, but nevertheless,
right.
I
think he should have came back as a heel, or this company really needs a baby face, and he should have had a good long baby face in the Chase sort of run where he's like the snarky Deadpool like baby face that the company needs as they're fighting against Okada and the Young Bucks and like this sort of like corporate these corporate stooges, and then that results in an unlikely alliance between Tony Khan and MJF sort of
Well, what's funny is he did that for the first 2 weeks. The first week he came out, he was pure heel. This is evil. This is about evil. No more Mr. Nice Guy. No more wacky jokes. No more kangaroo kicks, blah, blah, blah. Second week he comes out and goes, I'm your scumbag. I'm kind of a baby face right now. Booga, 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 booga. And then they do the turn. You're not wrong on any of these counts. That's the thing. And they actually did what you thought they should do. They just didn't stick with it.
Yeah. And the result is three turns, basically. You know,
yes.
comes out heel, which he had been babyface and he had been the victim, but he comes out heel. He's basically like, I got screwed too hard. Now I'm like an evil guy. Then he's actually like, I'm a babyface. No reason turn. Big showish sort of energy on that one. And then he turns heel on Daniel Garcia. And that also felt big showy and sort of unearned. Like, he's just mad because Will Ospreay upstaged him. And then, I don't know, like, Will Ospreay as a babyface Is he lovable?
Bruv.
Right? Bruv, bruv rhymes with love. And I'm not arguing that. It definitely does. But is that the same thing as lovable? He's bruvable.
He's bruvable. Oh, that needs to be a shirt. Chris, that's how you make your money here. You license that. You trademark it tomorrow. And you sell it to Tony Khan. No, seriously, you should. There is something in Ospreay that is very, very likable. But then there's a point in all of his promos where he has to be defensive about himself. And that's where he gets a little bit heelish, a little bit too cocky.
Yeah, he comes off as arrogant. He kind of consistently comes off as arrogant, at least at some point in these promos.
Yes. And I can feel it every time I'm watching a promo. I'm going, this is good, this is good. Ooh, that was no. and then he has to kind of, win them back, and he usually does, but at the same time, it's like 30% into his promo, he will say a line that just turns me off in some way, and I'm just waiting for him to make the comeback. But there's something in there.
His motivation, I mean, I'm not saying he's, not unlovable, but it's like he doesn't have anything. And this is, kind of the same thing with Strickland. What is lovable about Swerve Strickland's motivations as champion right now?
There's nothing. He is a problem in some ways, because it's one of those things where it's just, yeah, I'm great and I'm a champion. Okay. Cool. And I have this edge. We have to have this edge, but we also have to have the goofy part to taper the edge a little bit, Nana will say whose house and dance, and I'm gonna be all gruff and stuff, and
But there's nothing lovable about the dynamic between Swerve and Nana, even. Like, that hasn't evolved. Like, right? a great way to make him more lovable is to actually have fun little skitlets with Nana and Swerve where they're just both likable guys, and you see that these guys are legitimately friends with one another.
The thing I will say is that Ospreay has more of a connection with the fans, whereas Swerve to me is, I'm doing the Swerve character and you need to like it, kind of a thing. And I think that Swerve doesn't feel like he has a connection with the fans other than whose house, Swerve's house, to me, when he's cutting his promos. I don't know if I'm correct on that. That's just a theory I'm now.
No,
I'm
kind of with you. I think any time he tries to appeal to really much of anything else, it all just feels lazy and half-assed.
Like when he came out and announced that he was going to be in the Blood and Guts match, it was mostly to take a few shots at the EVPs and to say, hey, if you want somebody to save this company, you should call on the champ. It was almost like a heel coming out there and announcing he was going to be a babyface for a Blood and Guts match.
Right. That I'm doing... It had more of the energy of the reluctant anti-hero.
Yes.
Rather than the true babyface guy who, is trying to be a role model, especially to a subsection of the audience, which is a thing he has said at various points, or sort of like implied at various points in presentation. I don't know. Like, this is a big problem with a lot of these baby faces. Is they don't seem to have really kind of committed and sincere and endearing motivations. Danielson in the Owen Hart Classic. This should have been a much more connected and like obvious story of like, this is a guy who idolizes Owen Hart.
Yes.
That he wants this and you even have a thing where Jarrett meets with Danielson, before the match, and he's the special guest enforcer. Jarrett's basically like, I'm not going to break the rules or whatever. What?
I think the entire problem with the match was that everything was about Jarrett.
Jarrett.
Being friends out there. And I love Jeff Jarrett in this incarnation. Get me wrong.
Then he should have been in the finals.
No, either. Yes. I would agree there, but here's what I will say. Your idea, he should have had a vignette with Danielson where he gives him the rub and just sends Danielson on his way to win. He shouldn't have been involved in this match. He shouldn't have, quote unquote, screwed. Because I think the story is going to be that Hangman had his shoulder up and that Jarrett didn't see it. So it's just going to be more about Jarrett. Jeff Jarrett, once he was beat, should have been out of this story. I hate to say that, but once he was, if you're not going to let him win the whole thing for his friend, tell him, hey, I got my butt kicked. Go get him, Danielson, and do it for Owen. Boom. There you go. And he's off. Instead, it became this overbooked.
Oh, I know.
Mess and where the
this would have been really
Jarrett.
Good too. Yeah. Like where if Jarrett had been in the finals and Danielson had been his corner man or whatever, that would have been great. But having this be about Jarrett, but not be about Jarrett was dumb. And definitely, you know, I think who won the Owen finals in 2024 is going to feel like a trivia question. People are going to have a hard time remembering this in like 3 years.
Well, and here's the other thing. You didn't need the heat of Jarrett because you have Nigel McGuinness on commentary cutting him down at every moment. You know, oh, this clam digger. Oh, yeah, Bryan Danielson's a quitter. You know, all these other things. You don't need this much stuff going on. You especially for the television part of it. I get you probably did for the arena part of it with Jeff Jarrett and stuff. But Jeff Jarrett doesn't have, in the 2 weeks that they've been building him as Owen Hart's best friend before he died, he doesn't have.
They had nearly 70 matches, Jeffrey.
But he doesn't have the love of the AEW crowd for it. And that's the problem. They still consider him the guy with Jay Lethal and Satnam Singh. They don't consider him Owen's best friend doing this for him because, again, they didn't necessarily hype that for long enough. They didn't condition the audience long enough to do it. They just did it to see if they could get a quick babyface pop out of him, and it's just...
Right.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
This season, Instacart has your back to school. As in, they've got your back to school lunch favorites like snack packs and fresh fruit. And they've got your back to school supplies like backpacks, binders, and pencils. And they've got your back when your kid casually tells you they have a huge school project due tomorrow. Let's face it, we were all that kid. So first call your parents to say, I'm sorry. And then download the Instacart app to get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes all school year long. Get a $0 delivery fee for your first 3 orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
They do cheap baby face heat a lot where it's like that they don't, I'm with you, like earn, you know, have Jarrett go out there and like really rep Owen for a good 5-6 months going into this, you know, like basically, you know, have Jarrett talking about the end of his career and thinking about you know, his favorite moments or whatever, basically saying this is the chapter of his life that when he thinks about the end of the road, this is the one thing that he always wished could have been different somehow.
Have Danielson
if you can get it cleared with Martha Hart. I don't know if you can. And I'm not saying swing him down from the ceiling. I'm not saying that, but have him dress as the Blue Blazer for a bit. Do as his homage to Owen. Because Bryan Danielson would sell that kind of an idea, that goofy type of thing. Where he's like, well, to really get in the spirit of Owen, I'm going to be the Blue Blazer for a while. I'm quitting the Blackpool Combat Club or something. Because Brian, that's a goofy Bryan Danielson idea.
And having him tag with Jarrett as sort of like this tribute tag. Yes.
Yes, that's a great idea.
Jarrett initially hates it and then like realizes that it's actually awesome. And that like...
And then Jay Lethal will have a problem with it. And you have a little 8-week story in there. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I love that idea of teaming with Jarrett for a few times. Just, you know, just to get into character. It's a method acting thing, you know?
Yeah.
Man, this Owen always feels cheap to me in some ways. It feels like they're trying to get a point over. And look, I like Martha Hart and everything, and she thinks it's a great tribute. I just find Tony doesn't put a lot of depth of thinking into some of this. He just puts some names in there. He decides who he wants to win, and then he tries to figure out a story while he's running the tournament.
Yeah, make sure that several people do the sharpshooter along the way.
Yes, that's pretty much the depth of it. I have talked enough. I'm going to lay out for you on whatever you want to talk about between any of these shows.
Yeah, I want to riff on like the overusage of blood on AEW and the diminishing returns.
Okay.
Starting from the Owen Classic here, I thought that the Danielson bleeding all over the place it didn't have any impact to me because I wasn't I'm not emotionally invested in Danielson winning the Owen. Like that he was like the second best story, maybe, you know, in the Owen tourney. Jarrett was obviously the strongest of the four. So like once he's out, as someone who wants the babyface to win, I'm a bit deflated. This other guy, I'm like, I like Danielson, but you know, I don't care that much. And so you got him bleeding, but I didn't think it really sold Adam Page as particularly sinister. And if you're going to have Adam Page basically be twisted, like this should have been, he is annihilating Bryan Danielson and doing it right in front of Martha Hart, who has to get like emotional and sad. And she's like disgusted at what's happening in like the tribute of Owen's memory. And then like at the end of it, you have Adam Page sort of like covered in Danielson's blood, accepting the trophy from Martha Hart, going like, thank you so much, Martha. It's such an honor.
That is so deliciously evil. And I love it. I love
it's
that
such
idea.
Like this is such an honor. Thank you. And then he cuts the promo about why he's going to go up against Swerve Strickland and like why he wants, you know, all this other stuff. But basically you have Adam Page come out and defile the tournament, so to say. And I think that's earned blood to me. That's why you would do blood. That's where blood turns into money. This, you know, Danielson bleeding to win the tourney. Again, I think at the end of this, Danielson winning in 24 is going to feel like a trivia question. It's not necessarily going to be this highlight of 24. And then we get to our main event angle here with Tony Storm and Mariah May.
Before you go to that, I think here's my fear. Because allegedly, it's going to be Bryan Danielson and Swerve Strickland at Wembley.
Okay.
But what if, as I was saying before, it sounds like there might be something with Hangman having his left shoulder up when Jarrett called the three. And of course the EVPs go, well, that's not fair. We need to have a rematch.
Right.
For Wembley, Hangman versus Danielson, Hangman and Swerve at Wembley, and then Danielson at whatever the hell the Washington PLE after that is. So he loses out on Wembley, and maybe that's where Nigel comes
in. But I don't, that's not where I'm trying to go with this. I don't want to lose thread. I don't want to lose the thread on this.
Okay, go ahead. Sorry.
So I'm trying to talk about the blood and second part of the show.
Go ahead. Sorry,
so my point is now we cut to our main event angle, and our main event angle is about this horrible, brutal, and emotional betrayal of Tony Storm. And how do we ramp the intensity up to this to a 10? We got to bleed out Toni Storm. I get, and that's where the blood on this show should have been used. Like, okay, if you're going to have a blood spot in this episode, I'm not against it, but you have won a show. You don't, because not just for taste, not for morals, not for the sense of, just because it doesn't actually do anything. If everyone's bleeding on every segment, bleeding doesn't mean anything. And this main event angle with Toni Storm and Mariah May called for things to get over the top. It works great too with Toni Storm because the whole glamorous blonde hair, you know, pristine white skin, usually white clothing. So covering all of that with blood is super impactful, but it has a lot less of that impact when Danielson's bleeding like a stuck pig an hour prior. So that was my point here. Is my point okay, is no, not about not about Danielson and Paige. I was trying to move past that.
No, I knew that, but it was just one. I'm sorry. It was just one of those things where it's like I thought we were just gonna move on from the whole angle after this because I don't like circling back. So okay, no, that's a great point. And yeah, it's a lot like, you know, I said on that on last, I think it was last week's Dynamite. You know, you had three of those quote unquote emotionally resonant beatdowns to end the show. You had Hook and Jericho, you had I forgot the other one, and then you had the Garcia MJF, and I'm like, those are all three in the row. Why didn't you just do one on the show and make it important? You're exactly right. When Jon Moxley bleeds on every show, it doesn't show me that it's a brutal battle. It just shows me he likes to bleed a lot.
Right. And bleeding is just kind of like part of like this kayfabe world. I mean, this is the problem too with like Jericho and his weird goofy things that hurt penchant, like where he likes to use like wacky items that
hockey
actually are
pucks.
Hockey pucks, Legos, and this week we have horseshoes.
Yes.
Like things that are at once zany, but also, as I commented to my friend, man, there's absolutely no way I would take a bump on a horseshoe. Like, one of those into your ribs is absolutely breaking your friggin' rib.
It's an God, such an indie-rific thought. You know, it's like, we can't afford this. Oh, my brother owns a farm. I'll just go take some old used horseshoes in the ring and we can use them or something like that.
Yeah, no, it's like, oh, we need a spike pit. Well, we don't have a spike pit. What if we had, like, kind of rough objects pit, you know, like
rough objects pit. You know, a broken wooden spoon we found in the kitchen drawer.
You know, like piece of bent metal that's kind of unpleasant to bump up against.
Old double A batteries.
Yeah,
that in our remote just, control.
You know, stuff that would hurt. You know, like a couple micro machines.
Yeah, some old toys from the '80s and no GoBots. That nobody ever heard because everybody played with Transformers. Sure, why not?
some old appliances, you know, like an egg beater.
An egg beater. Yeah, Hamilton Beach Blender from 1975.
Do you want to take a – if commentary just does their damn job and sells that egg beater.
Are we talking like one of the spinning ones or are we talking an electric?
Yeah.
My God. You know what that would be? Oh. Dude, that would be such an ECW 1994 spot where people were bringing their own weapons to the arena and stuff and handing them to New Jack and stuff. Not 94, 96 maybe, but yeah. I'll tell you one thing I was surprised at this week, Chris.
What?
I had predicted that, yeah, eventually there's going to be a Rascals reunion, and I thought it was going to be Wesley and TNA. Nope, they brought back Zach Wentz back into the company. And let me tell you, I'm happy for him. I don't think he's going to be re-signed. I don't think they're going to be brought in permanently. I think having every stupid thing you do put on social media for the judgment of the public, I don't like it. I was happy that Wentz got his moment, though. I was a little bit surprised that they showed up here.
He is still the Dane Cook of professional wrestling.
He is, though. Yes, you are correct on that. I'm not going to...
When they showed up on NXT
with the MSK branding,
I thought they were going to turn on Wesley just because they are so unrelentingly and obnoxiously, heelishly positive.
They still might. That still might be the end game of this, is that they turn the other two on there. But it's like they had a backstage promo. I don't know if this made TV. I can't remember.
What do you guys call each other when it's me and him?
Oh, yes.
We're MSK. Okay. But when it's all three of us, we're rascals. Like, I'm like, oh my God.
That is so obnoxious. Yeah, no, like, I agree.
I hate the three of you so much.
But on the other hand, I like that kind of positive obnoxiousness if it's pure.
Well, you know, here's the thing. Fortunately, they're up against one of the other grating heel personalities.
Gallus,
who have the WWE's favorite trope now, guys in the mid-30s who talk like they are around 50 grumbling about the internet, where they're like, oh, you guys, all you ever do is you post on your social media. It's like, dude, you're 33. Stop. Like,
you know who they are? They're chronic. They have that. It's like, oh, here comes this big fight. And then, you know, chronic. Oh, God, no. And I used to, you know, I liked them in NXT UK, but they've done nothing with them except being cranky Scots who, we're going to start a fight, and then they never win a fight. I get it. Your turn, sir.
No, Gallus is the millennial anti-online, but extremely online, but anti-online thing. You know, it's like where you're online, but you're like, oh, all these people, all they ever do is post. But like, you're the guy who's posting that shit all the time.
It's like they'll say it's like bullet. You're on bulletin boards all the time. It's like bulletin boards have been popular since like 1996. Get out of here.
But that's also something that somebody who's actually terminally online would say.
Yeah. Well, no. What it would be is somebody like Shawn Michaels sitting in his office complaining about people on the internet and going, "We need to put that in a script somehow." Here you go.
Yeah. HB Shizzle. What happened on Raw? How do we even begin to capture the excellence that is the Judgment Day segments? They're so good. Everybody
Carlito's
is
killing me, man. He's killing me.
Like the three of them popping their head from around the corner this week. Everybody's doing such good work. They're all such good characters.
Carlito has added a new level of being the middle-aged guy in the club who doesn't quite get it, but he says the worst things to the point where it's like he's like still stuck in his prime time. And everything he says is now politically incorrect to the kids who are living today. Where it's like, oh no, that's really cool. No, it's not. It's horrible. It's sexist, Carlito. That's terrible. You stop that. You know, it's such a weird meta commentary in some ways. And I don't like meta, but it's just also just like, he's a man who is, he's like, quantum leap. He has landed in the body of somebody who shouldn't be in that time, and he's from 20 years in the past. It's just so. But he doesn't overpower the segment. He's just in there for one line, and he gets yelled at, and he shuts up. And meanwhile, Finn Balor might be doing the best character work of his career in this thing, in this evil lieutenant thing, who's pulling the strings, trying to stage a coup within. Type of a thing. As he gets older, he gets better in terms of the character work. He may not be the same
true,
Prince
Priest
Devitt
too.
Yeah, well, Priest just had to stop doing the goofy archer stuff and living in infamy. Like, he had that character when he was the ladies man in NXT, kind of a thing where he's kind of like that cool like pimp type thing where he's in the hot tub with two women after women the belt and stuff like that. He was good, and then they brought him back to the heavy catchphrase stuff that Vince loves. And now he has the most relaxed cadence of anybody on WWE television. In terms of acting, I never believe he's acting. I believe he's just being who he is and saying lines that he might actually say. It's so weird and refreshing because it just never, like, he'll just like say these little asides in there when he's reacting to something that don't sound scripted to me.
No, he's just like in the scene.
Yes.
He's really, really good at immersing himself in the Judgment Day scenes and just sort of believing that he is in the room with all these characters. And like, you know, having Devitt to play off of helps him a lot because Devitt's doing great work too. So that makes it that much easier for Priest to do great work. And then Dom's definitely holding up his end of it. Like all the support characters are doing their part. And then Liv's been awesome too.
Well, it's cool. And you say that, and this is a perfect segue for what I was about to bring up. In the Devitt segments, he is the alpha in the scene, kind of. He's in control. He's being the champ. He's the guy who's in charge. He's the leader. In the Dom scenes, he's kind of the straight man to Dom's goofy dumbass a little bit, where he's like, he's playing second fiddle to Dom's stupidity right now, but he's being, you know, he's a aggressive straight man where he's like telling him the truth. He's like, look, this is stupid. Mommy's gonna kill you. Oh no, man, I got it under control. Okay, you're an idiot, and just walks off or whatever. It's two different roles that he's playing at the same time, and that's what makes his character such a well-rounded thing. It's good stuff, and I loved everybody involved when they brought back Rhea, including Liv. Like Liv, somebody wrote me and goes, "Oh, I just think they've mishandled Liv, whatever." I think Liv's doing some of the best stuff she's ever done.
Yeah, mishandled.
Her playing the saucy vixen who's, you know, Eve tempting Adam over here to bite the apple because, hey, you'll know as much as he does.
It's great because she has every reason to hate Rhea Ripley.
Yes.
And, you know, the thing that I think has been forgotten is that the Judgment Day are bad people. So, like, Liv is actually doing this to bad people.
Yes.
Like, what she is...
people think of them as a babyface group far too more than they are. They're not.
They're not. And have not been, and basically never do babyface things as a group. As a group, never. Never.
No, Damian Priest is a babyface.
Damian Priest... group. Right. Damian Priest does babyface things, but the rest of them never do. Dom's never respectful to his father. Finn Balor and JD McDonagh never respect anybody. The only person who gives respect is Priest. Even Rhea doesn't. And that's, you know, part of why Liv hate. I mean, you know, I think it'll be funny. I would love to have a Liv makes her case to the people segment where she basically explains, like, Principal Skinner style, but actually correct. No, it's all of you who are wrong. Like, I'm actually what I did here was actually awesome. These people suck. These are crappy people.
Yeah, the best part of the Dom character, he goes, I'm going to handle it. And then he never handles it. He's just procrastinating until now it's time.
He's a great character. He's such an idiot too. Yes. The line from a couple of weeks ago, just his line delivery of like, my father's a deadbeat, still just cracks me up. I hate him. He's a deadbeat.
Yeah, I like that. I'm kind of liking this new kind of almost. Look, it's nothing new in WWE, but it is for the women, this new kind of factions of three type of thing. And I kind of, look, I'm not saying they're going to be a great faction, but I kind of like the Sonya Deville, Zoe Stark, Shayna Baszler trio. Cause I like Zoe Stark a lot. I've always liked, I had a bit of a personal, thing because, Sonya/Daria was at Fightful when I was there. She was doing MMA coverage before she got picked up by WWE. And I like Shayna a lot. Shayna's just cool. If you ever get to meet her, she's nothing like you see on TV. She's just warm and sweet and nice to people. She's great. So, and plus Shayna was part of my favorite trios of women. There was a group in shimmer called Trifecta. It was Mercedes Martinez, Nicole Savoy, and Shayna was their young girl, and they were just awesome. So, like, I'm liking this trio thing. Damage Control, I think, needs a little bit of work. I think Dakota Kai may soon be on the outs there, even though I think she still does great work with them. But I'm liking that they're giving the women more and more. There's rumors. Now, I didn't put this in the news, but let me ask you this. Do you any compunctions about the women having mid-card titles? And I see in a U.S. title, because we already have the tag titles that we can't really do much with.
Yeah, I was just saying, I would be a no on that, just because I feel like the show doesn't need more titles.
Yeah, we don't need this to be AEW.
You don't want to be AEW, right? Like, where people have titles, and I look at the belt, and I have no earthly idea what that belt is.
Right.
That's not good.
Anywhere you want to go, you can.
Man, was there anything, NXT,
Joe Hendry?
Yeah, we certainly did bring in Joe Hendry.
Joe Hendry is such a WWE guy, stuck in a company that's not WWE.
I mean, well, I for how long? Clearly they love this guy. So, TNA, if I'm TNA, I am trying to sell this contract to WWE right away. Sell high on this guy. Absolutely. Like, you know, Joe Hendry is fine. I think he's a great if anything, seeing Joe Hendry made me see how much Trick Williams is missing. As like a babyface complete package, yes, sort of character. Joe Hendry just feels like this complete coherent thing. And Trick Williams feels like a man on an identity search. And Ethan Page, for his part, I think plays a very good champion. There's still a bit of like goofiness at this point. I don't feel like they've completely stuck the landing with how all egos should be dominating the show. Don't love the Sean Spears stuff.
Page has a problem because he's very funny, but he's great as a, it's the MJF problem. He can be great as evil, and then he will lose a lot of that credibility by trying to get a laugh line in there or trying to be funny, which he also is, but it ruins everything evil he's been doing in there.
Yeah, no, I agree. I was not dazzled by Lexus King and Tony D'Angelo. I really am bothered by the idea that the Heritage Cup is turning into like a cultural like race thing instead of like a wrestling heritage thing. Like Tony started calling it the Italian Heritage Cup, and then Lexus King has been doing all this like, I'm an American, and being American means liking rock music, and I'm going to make this the American Heritage Cup. And I'm like, no, we don't. This is not what anyone needs.
This is
needs
going
the
into dangerous territory, kids.
Right. This is not what the Heritage Cup needs to be. Like, there's no value added and lots of value lost with this sort of presentation.
Yes.
Beyond that, I NXT continues to be kind of a rough watch, in my opinion.
Yes, it has lost a lot of what was making it good. Like, there's still little things. Like, I still love JC Jane, and I love, you know, Thea Hale. Still, Chase U is still, you know, still gets a laugh out of me here and there.
Except that we're running in circles with this whole Ridge Holland crap, and like, Ridge Holland sabotaging Chase U or whatever kind of actually feels a lot like what's her name, Liv Morgan, you know, doing all the stuff with Judgment Day. And I don't know. I just we've tried with the Ridge Holland story. It sort of, I mean, again, this is like a B-level faction or a C-level faction.
I want feud with real emotion and real hate. That's my problem with NXT right now, is everything feels put upon. It feels like WWE, the WWE of like always, you know, it feels like that just everything's a big, goofy, bright character Nobody has like any 2014 real edge to
or like 2012 WWE. Yeah,
nobody
like
has any 12, edge.
13 years ago.
Nobody's real. Nobody really dislikes anybody. We're all, you know what it is? It's NXT high school. We're all classmates and we all go to class together and we do all have school spirit and we're here for the fun of it. And then, you know, someday we'll come back for the reunion, but we're just waiting to leave for college right now.
Right. And also everyone does sort of feel like it's weird. NXT is very caricature-y, but like Raw and SmackDown have multidimensional characters like a Drew McIntyre, or even, you know, to an extent, a Chad Gable, who have like facets to their personality. And yeah. On NXT, it's like, I'm Saul Ruka. I'm a surfer. That means that I'm very chill. I like to be chill because I surf. And then, you know, you have Kalani Jordan, who's like, I'm a gymnast. I'm uptight because my entire life I've been an achiever. And that's what being a gymnast is, which is what I am. And then you have like
turn-ons, walks at the beach. Turn-offs, mean people. It's like, oh God, whatever. We're
going. Yeah, I mean, NXT suffers from
it's vapid.
It's very vapid. I mean, even Ariana Grace, like she's a great character actor, but like, dude, there is nothing to this beauty queen character. There is no growth. Every week is Seinfeld. These people learn nothing.
Yeah.
From week over week. Like Ariana Grace doesn't change her strategies. There's sort of no refinement of anything she does. It's just the same, like, oh, well, I am a beauty queen in a wrestling show. And it's like, all right, right. But like, you've said that enough.
It's groundling sketches is what it is. It's one note characters just in this world, and we never do anything except hit that joke hard, hard, hard. Yeah. Chris, it's time for Vader Club.
It is.
You have chosen Rob Van Dam and Sabu versus Jinsei Shinsaki and Hayabusa. Tell us all about it.
All right, basically, I wanted to show my buddy Hot Dog Hakushi / Jinsei Shinsaki content this week, and it was time for Vader Club. So I went on ProfileDB. I tend to just, you know, pick out the high star rating match and, you know, watch it and see what the Meltzer star ratings mean in terms of alignment. Turns out that Meltzer star ratings are increasingly arbitrary the more I just kind of study them informally.
Like it's what numbers, he likes. It's prisoner these, of the moment.
It's vibes.
Really,
dude,
prisoner
it's so
of the moment.
It's so vibes of the moment. Yeah, yes. Exactly. Yeah, like these. That's why it's like, you know, the whole idea of chasing star ratings means nothing. So like we ended up watching two matches. One was Rob Van Dam and Sabu versus Jinsei Shinsaki and Hayabusa once they start like kind of like deep into their tag team match.
What year is this, by the way?
This would be 98. Okay. Is the year that they have this match, because they don't get Shinsaki just doesn't get anywhere near enough work in the United States. Heyman doesn't quite see the money in this guy. Vince doesn't see the money in this guy. Neither does WCW. It's very strange. WCW with a growing cruiserweight division would have absolutely benefited from having a Shinsaki on their roster to round out the Ultimo Dragons, the Dean Malenkos, the Chris Benoits, the Eddie Guerreros. I mean, in that pack of guys, he would have been awesome. Obviously, Undertaker wanted to have a match or a series of matches against Hakushi, which they ended up doing a little bit of business together. But really, we get precious little Shinsaki in the U.S. level work. And so that's why I picked out this ECW match. A lot of people have seen this match before. It's considered one of ECW's better matches. I will just note, Sabu in this match, I believe, I looked it up, he's only like 31. His body looks like it's 50.
Yes.
Already. He looks absolutely withered at this point already by the time he's in his early 30s.
I was going to let you go on into the match, but I can give commentary if you want to leave that hanging.
Please.
I can do,
please.
Yes. Because Sabu has been killed. I mean, Sabu was internet special in 93, 94, and he's just been killing himself to get over with these fans and hopefully get signed by a company. I learned this is watching this match, you realize Hayabusa was Sabu, and Sabu was Hayabusa in many, many ways.
Oh yeah.
Continue.
Yeah, look, the problem with this match is it is too much similarity on both sides. The problem with the match is
this is the Spider-Man meme is what this is.
Yes, and when you have Hayabusa and Sabu in there, that should be awesome, but it is not awesome because these guys' timing are just such crap. However, at the same time, Hayabusa does these incredible flying spots, you know, especially for that era. You know, the triangle moonsault to the outside looks incredible. Sabu's high spots, you know, look crazy.
When it can hit them, they look great.
Then when you get him, they look great. But like Hayabusa right out the chute goes for a springboard arm drag thing against Rob Van Dam, who's also not exactly the master of timing. And it doesn't, it wasn't going to hit because Hayabusa wasn't close on that one. It is really, you know, this match is held together by Jinsei Shinzaki.
Yes, you are very correct about that.
When you're looking at Meltzer's star ratings, it, you know, this is like a 4-star match, I think it is, or whatever, on Meltzer's scale. And that's got to all be given to Shinzaki, because when he's wrestling Van Dam, it settles into a nice match. He's able to do all of his offense on Sabu. It's just fine. Sabu doesn't screw up the cells. And Shinzaki has so many moves in his moveset that look good. They're not just moves that he does. They're signature moves of his that are stylized and executed with crispness and precision and personality. His power bomb looks good. His crucifix, you know, backbreaker looks good. His rope walk, his, you know, corner rope walk looks good. His top rope shoulder block looks good. All of Shinzaki's offense looks good. He doesn't miss his spots. And that really does hold together this match. This
was the time where high spots were becoming, I mean, they had already been a thing, but where this was a thing. And I think a lot of Dave's high regard for this match is the spectacle of Shinzaki and Hayabusa having a match in the United States, especially Hayabusa coming over in the FMW style of territory where ECW was at this point. and this is kind of a dream match because these guys are very, very similar. And I agree with you. It's their similarity that kind of brings the match down. Now, this is the point. I don't like ECW in this time period. My ECW fandom kind of faded after WCW stripped them bare. This is where there's no longer a variety of styles on the card. It's just a lot of hardcore table breaking, chair shots, Taipei glass matches occasionally.
I mean, evidenced by the fact that we need to have Sabu and Rob Van Dam with like 4 belts at this point. Yeah, like they're both doing double duty as champions.
And they're doing the can they coexist thing because they're each kind of in competition with one another. The match itself is hard to watch because Bill Alfonso never stops blowing that damn whistle. This is the period where we have Shane Douglas as color commentary, and all he's doing is kind of yelling and putting guys over as opposed to let Joey Styles call the match, much like I interrupt Chris far too much. I'll bury myself occasionally. I know I do that. I'm sorry. It has a lot of great things, but you know, this is like the Gangstanators period where, like, you know, because Mustafa's just left. So New Jack not Perry Saturn, because Perry Saturn's also left and John Cronus are a team. It's not fun for me to watch but it was starting to get like the hype to get back onto Spike at that time. Like the Dudley Boys.
I wish this was just Shinzaki versus Rob Van Dam for the television title. That would honestly have been. And I'd rather have this broken down into 2 singles matches. It's like Sabu versus Hayabusa for the title, and they can just have like a car crash, put each other through a table multiple times match, Rob Van Dam and Hakushi can have like the actual match.
Yeah. It really, well, you watched Shinzaki versus Hayabusa too as part of this.
Yes, thing. Right. And that was, to me, much more entertaining. One of the great things about Shinzaki is I think he works as good as a babyface as he does a heel. Like, as a babyface, there's something about his stoic resoluteness and you know, wanting, you know, kind of persevering through pain, though clearly registering it, that's compelling and sympathetic. As a heel, there is this like natural slowness to his pacing by virtue of being a Buddhist monk that makes all of his, everything he does seem methodical and stalking. And in this match against Hayabusa, which I think is like the, you know, predicate for them becoming a tag team, like they have this match and then afterwards great Sasuke comes in and is like, hey guys, that was really great, you know, cool fight, be a team. I think what's going on there at the end of the match, because everyone's holding up their hands. But like what happens during the match is Hayabusa injures his leg. And at that point, it is a slow and steady chip away by Hakushi I like the way that the match sort of concludes where, yeah, Hayabusa fights back a little bit. And he's not, you know, he shows his warrior spirit, but Shinzaki realizes that he's got the match at hand and starts hitting all those headbutts off the top rope, like over and over and over again. That's a great spot. What I really enjoy is the stopping and scanning Hayabusa to make sure it's not a ruse. Every time he's about to go up, he stops and he's just looking and making sure that this isn't a ruse. And then he comes off the top for another one.
If you want to hear more about Chris talking Jinsei Shinzaki in our long dormant Patreon, I don't know if we ever released this as a free episode. We might have at one time, but we did a kind of a career retrospective of Great Muda and Jinsei Shinzaki, that led up to the match against one another that we watched. Look within the archives of the free stuff, see if it's in there. If not, hey, join the Patreon for $1 and go download it and then quit. Give Chris the buck for our work. But no, that's a very enjoyable episode. I don't have a choice yet for Vader Club. I'll try and think of one over the weekend. It'll probably involve Bobby Eaton again. I've been really enjoying what I've seen of Bobby Eaton. So
yeah, I'm going to make him on Virtual Pro Wrestling 2 on my cartridge here. And I'm going to make Chris Canyon on my cartridge here, which is going to be my next Vader Club.
I won't pick him then. Something. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless there's a Chris Canyon Bobby Eaton match, but I don't think there is.
Well, I'll let you look for it. If there is, I'll let you.
Okay. Yeah, no, I was going to say, if that exists, that'd be awesome.
I may just show you that 30-minute Vader and Austin versus Flair and Anderson match that ended in like a DQ 2 minutes after they ran out of TV time. It's a good match. It's interesting, but it goes nowhere, but it's fun to watch.
Right,
I'll think about it. I'll think on it, kids, and I'll let you all know. This has been Shake the Ropes. You can follow me at Crap Game on Elon Musk's lovely X app. Follow Chris on Instagram at @TOCTOR_NOV on Instagram only. If you want to just follow the show for when new episodes come out, you can follow Shake Them Ropes on X. I update that when the stuff comes out. We are part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. We love being with them. I was trying to think of a segue.
God convincing me.
No, I didn't mean that as offset. I got a lot on my mind, Chris. I've been through a lot today. Shows for all of your stuff. I may be guest starring on Good Bad Hungy next week, so we'll see about that and be trashing AEW there. Hopefully not. But listen to the flagship, listen to the 5-star match game, listen to the Good Bad Hungy, listen to Days of Thunder, listen to all the shows over there. I also do shows when I'm not in the emergency room for the Fight Game Media Network. I do the Dynamite show on Wednesdays about 20 minutes after Dynamite ends. Paul Fontaine and I go live on YouTube, drops in your audio feeds the next morning, thoroughly deconstructing that week's Dynamite. I apologize for that Voices of Wrestling plug. I did not mean to slight them in my tone of voice. It's just I'm very tired right now. Chris, get your plugs in.
Yes, follow me on Instagram, DOCTOR_NOV. My name is Chris Del Mabrino. I am running for president.
No.
I look. So you're gonna want to follow me on Instagram for all my important campaign slogans, literature, factoids about the country and my candidacy in the upcoming weeks. Yeah, I got a little extra time on my hands, Jeff. I thought I'd run for president here for the next few months until I figure out something else to do for work. So I will be running for president. I am running for president. I'm also teaching guitar lessons. Support my candidacy. Learn how to play guitar. Follow me on Instagram, Dr. Nov.
See you next week.
Hey now, it's Mike Gilbert, host of the Mike and JD Show, right here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Join JD by God Oliva and myself every Thursday night live on the Voices of Wrestling YouTube channel at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time as we stay up all night discussing all the hottest stories in professional wrestling. You can also check us out right here on the Voices of Wrestling podcasting feed, or you can subscribe to the Mike and JD Show feed. Now, enjoy the show.